This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
When it comes to hiring, don't go searching for the one. Just meet your match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Despite what their moms told them, they just aren't talented enough for radio. Unfortunately, anyone can have a show these days. Sean.
Well, I'm pretty hard to figure out sometimes. In fact, I can't even figure myself out sometimes, so don't you try to.
Joe.
You're an idiot. And really, a disloyal person.
This is the Cuse Militia. Those two unapologetically biased orange-blooded homers, Sean and Joe.
It's the most bullshit thing I've seen in 30 years.
Welcome, orange men and ladies. Happy Wednesday. This is the Cuse Militia with Sean and Joe. And we still got nothing, again, from Joe. That's three episodes in a row with no crack. I heard nothing. At Cuse Militia on the socials. Go there, join the freaking militia. If you still love mediocre content for Syracuse basketball and football, go there, join it. And you will be pleasantly fulfilled with mediocrity from myself and mostly Joe's beer cracks, which are performing below mediocre currently. I just told Joe right before we came on that every time we do this, he disappoints me some way. That's the third time today. But I'm not disappointed in him as much as I am disappointed in the Syracuse basketball team as they suffer their first home loss of the year. 85-69 to Florida State last night. They dropped to 13-6, 4-4 in the ACC after that quad three loss and a quad one win, actually. Not anymore. Again, Florida State beats Syracuse. It was a quad one game for them at the time. And by the time the night was said and done, or Monday morning came and the net rankings came back out, Syracuse dropped from 68 to 82.
Wow.
So Syracuse down by 20 at one point, up by one at the half. Just couldn't see anything fall. Bad offense turns to bad defense, turns to sad efforts, turns to Judiman's trying to carry the back on his team, and this isn't that team. And They will never, ever, ever be able to recover like that. Syracuse, in their wins, have done great. A lot of times a struggle to get there, but the ones they won and pulled off, they did pretty, I don't want to say handily, but we only had one cardiac Cuse game. So it was within control towards the end of the game on the great majority of those. But when they lose, baby, they freaking do it right. Like, there is no cardiac Cuse loss this year. It is just loss. And they have gotten hammered. And I don't know what it looks like for... I should have looked this up. But 16 turnovers for Syracuse yesterday. And only created 9. Now, we mentioned Florida State was going to go about 12 deep. And they did. Damn close. If my number really is 10, But they had a couple 9-minute guys in there, and they really went about 11, really. But anyways, with that said, look, we're only going, you know, 7-8, and the bench points 29-16. I think Florida State had over 50 points in the paint. I mean, you can't do much worse than 1-for-14 from behind the arc, 7%. And when the shots are dropping, Syracuse has got a shot at winning a game. But when the shots are dropping, the energy's there, the defense is there, and they just couldn't guard last night. I think they did get wore out. I mean, Coach Autry said as much. That's not something that Coach Boeheim was ever willing to admit. I mean, we all knew that was, I'd say, living in a fantasy world. But, of course, these guys get burnt out when you got fresh legs constantly rotated in. It didn't matter how many guys they got in foul trouble. Although they did a pretty damn good job. You know, if this is a regular size, regular depth team, there's an issue there. It's just not. Florida State can overcome that. And so it was never a real issue, even though you got a couple guys close. But, you know, when you do get to the line, and Syracuse did, Judah Mintz misses 5 in a row. I mean, that never bodes well. Even if they go ahead and they hit the other 11 shots, and we give them all 11, I don't know what kind of trend the game would have been at, but it's not enough points to win it the way it ended up. So just there's a lot of things to point to, and a lot of times in losses, there's only a couple. It was a team effort fail. It really was. Quadier got in trouble quickly with fouls. Judah was saying that the rotation was screwed up. They were getting bossed around in there by Watkins, and he had a career high, 27. So you know that's how that goes for Syracuse, and it's.
He's playing like an NBA player, man.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
He looked like an NBA player yesterday.
He did. And it's just, it's a frustrating game to watch. As close as it was being up by 1 at half and then just losing it. Once it got to 6 or 8 in the second half, you saw it. Just the gears switched, and the energy, effort, and all of the good things that were in the first half were not to be seen anymore. And despite the foul shooting woes in the first half, they were still in the game. And
still think we were in there.
I think we were too.
Eight, 10 minutes in the second quarter. I mean, we took the biggest lead that we had, and I'm like, okay.
Yeah. 8. And then which was 8?
Yeah, 7, I believe. But still, I mean, when you look at it, it wasn't even the rebounding. It was the defense to what Judah spoke about. Like, and the number one, you know, you saw the visual that they showed yesterday on TV about the percentage of time that Florida State presses. And even though they didn't get a lot of
10-second violation.
They got one 10-second violation, but they didn't get a lot of turnovers out of it. But it definitely slowed us down. It definitely gave us something to think about, and it made us work a little bit harder. And all that stuff, you know, I think that all attributes to wearing, the team down. And the other thing, too, is Florida State, I mean, they play this deep so that they can do that, right? Like you said, if it was a regular size team that didn't, you know, have 7 guys coming off the bench at some point, then they probably wouldn't play that physical because they know they can't play that physical. So with how deep they go and the size that they have, it's pretty easy for them to say this is going to be our defense philosophy no matter who's in there, and fouls aren't really going to bother them, right? We saw against Miami they had a couple guys who got in foul trouble, and I think that probably hurt them and was probably a big reason why we beat them. But Florida State can kind of overcome that, and they really shot bad in the first half, and we couldn't keep a guy in front of Watkins. We couldn't stop And to be perfectly honest with you, when some of the big men got the ball down low, you know, we had trouble defending them as well. I mean, you look at, Korn and Miller, for example, both had some, 10 and 12 points down low. Like you said, they had 50 points in the paint. So, you know, the way that that game was going, we had to stay in front of them and make them shoot jumpers from the outside, and we just allowed them to get too many easy baskets. And, yeah, whether it's a good excuse or not, we looked worn out once we got around the eight-minute mark in the second half.
Yes. And, you know, you take the lumps on this one. Unfortunately, like I said, it's a quad three loss, and so we're 5-1 in the quad three bracket right now. And I don't think this is by any means a dramatic like we're done, that's it, we gotta win out, or we gotta win X amount of games. I don't believe in the X amount of games thing anymore. I don't like putting a number on it. We used to say 20, right? Now I'm hearing a little bit higher. I mean, it's just, it doesn't matter. They just got to go try to win games, and that's it. They don't have to shoot for a number. It's not one of those things anymore. I just don't think that's how it works anymore. But with that said, this team's better than what I think they are ranked in the quadrant system right now. And I think that we'll see probably them creep up to maybe a quad two loss at some point.
I believe so too.
And so at the end of the day, you know, it's still kind of early in conference play, and everybody's got a chance to go ahead and do better. And, you know, I think, you know, you even have a chance of Pitt becoming a quad one win, two times two. I mean, there's still time for that. I mean, anything can happen right now. And so the whole thing's fluid, and there's plenty of basketball left. I don't think there's any reason to hit the panic button, but when I looked at these two games coming up, this one in NC State, and I said, you know, I really think they need one of them. This was the one I thought was the most realistic, I think, to think that they're going to go ahead and they're going to go and show out and come back against NC State, I don't know. It's tough to say. This is a different animal. They're not going to face it. They're not going to face a team like this again this year that I know of in the ACC.
Well, when you talk about height and stuff like that, height and depth. I mean, you know, stands Florida State and North Carolina. I don't know how many teams are built like that. So, and like, again, to your point, I mean, we had a lot more turnovers than they did. And, we didn't shoot well at all. JJ went from shooting lights out to not being able to hit anything. We'll be a 1-14 from the 3-point line. And also, Quadir's been a spark off the bench. And
Starling, too. I mean, not off the bench, but you know what I'm saying. He was.
Well, yeah. I just spoke with Starling. Going from what he shot on Saturday to yesterday isn't comparable. He still needs to hit some of those. And we definitely need Chris to Bell. Hit more free throws. You know, I did like how he did get to the free throw line as much, but Quadir is a spark off the bench, and he never really got going. And, you know, by the time he got in the game, and I just felt like he never really got in rhythm, and I feel like we really didn't have, we really weren't into the game, I feel like, as we have been, as far as not like we're not trying, but like I think that Florida State kept them out of a lot of stuff that they normally are pretty successful at, and that gets them going, gets the confidence going. And kudos to Florida State and to
this
to that team, and just and frustrating the hell out of
them. What'd you say? Go ahead, my computer started going berserk. What'd you say? Say that again.
Well, I was just saying kudos to Florida State for their defensive effort and taking what we do best away and making us have to shoot threes and do other things and making every basket hard. You know, like I said, not every team can do that, but you know, Florida State for that reason was why I was nervous as far as their height and how we were going to defend them down low, and then just obviously how they just defend you and put pressure on you and just never stop. So
it's just relentless. In the last three losses, which is going to be Florida State, it's going to be UNC, and it's going to be Duke. 16 turnovers against Florida State, 17 against UNC, 17 against Duke. It's 50 turnovers in the three losses, and just not being able to take care of the ball, and the length of Florida State was obviously an issue yesterday with passing and even inbounding the ball at one point.
And we had some uncharacteristic turnovers as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like Malik Brown had a couple that he normally doesn't do. And
true. But that's the difference in the team that you're playing too. There's a frustration level there. And there's also a sense of urgency. And when, you know, you have some of those things in gameplay, then that's where you can tend to either be composed and gather it up and go after it, or get yourself in a bad mental place and panic. And when you panic, and there's, it just creates those types of mistakes. And Malik Brown, uncharacteristically. he just did not have like a Malik Brown game yesterday. He wasn't creating the turnovers. He wasn't getting in there and grabbing the ball and whatnot, and kind of just being a nuisance. You know, he did have 12 rebounds. I thought that Syracuse did a tremendous job on the boards again, and I think they won. Yeah, they were +3. On the boards, and we worried about that coming into the game, which is excellent. But at the end of the day, shots aren't falling, and you know, you can talk about the defense, and I agree, but it started with the offense, and the offense couldn't score, and then the defense went south, and that's typical. I mean, it's typical college basketball. But let's go ahead.
I was just gonna say, most likely too. I mean, those rebound numbers are where they are because they had 50 points in the paint, and shot at a 49% rate last night. So I don't think there was a lot of rebounds to be had.
Well, that's also true. I mean, there's always that factor when you look at rebounding numbers, right?
Yeah.
But you know, the discrepancy at the line, 22-33, you know, again, we should have had done a little bit better there with that. We had our opportunities. Judah did a great job getting to the line the whole game, except for, you know, there was some times where there was a lull in the action for him as far as that goes. But but anyway, it is what it is. We move on. But, you know, I asked for your thoughts on the game. I'm going to do a couple thoughts on the game, and then I'll let Joe jump in on with some fan feedback from Facebook. And then we did put a poll out, and I think it's telling. And I just want to talk about it. I don't want to have a huge conversation. If you listen to the end of the last show, we had a conversation about the stand and clap. So I wanted to get everybody's thoughts, and I did. And I don't know if I was surprised or disappointed, but either way, we'll talk about that. But first, we're going to do a little bit of fan feedback. At Roger Clark 41, disappointing effort. You would think they would come out of Saturday's win with some momentum, but not so much. We talked about having a big crowd there. Joe, we were in a group text. We saw how many tickets were available.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that was the factor, but I'm saying it sure doesn't hurt to have a little bit more people there. And the place was kind of quiet. And, you know, there you could watch them exiting at one point. But, yeah, the momentum you would think is good. But, you know, I think, you know, when they talk about facing an NC State team this Saturday, which NC State plays tonight, they play Virginia. Most of you have already, that game will be over by the time you hear my voice say that. But Syracuse has done a tremendous job of rebounding after losses. And we'll see how that goes on Saturday against NC State. So, as far as momentum goes, I feel like they're a really good rebounding team when it comes to coming back and showing you that they're still around, and that's all we can hope for right now, because that game's done, right?
Yep.
Our buddy Nadal on and Darwish ONC. I don't know what the ONC is. We'll have to ask. Florida State is a good team. Beat Wake, Miami, Virginia Tech, and only lost to UNC by 8. We lost by 35, y'all. And no universe is that a bad loss. Regroup and get some more wins to bolster our resume, and we should be okay. I would completely agree with that. I don't think they're a bad team. Like I said, I wouldn't be surprised if pretty soon this is a quad two loss. Obviously, we should all be rooting for Florida State because you don't want that quad three loss on the record come determination time, right?
Right.
At David Super, the Miami game was fun with a memorable ending, but Noah, our boy Noah, at Noah Blanchard 44, said it after. Didn't love the offense. It was Boeheim's live and die by three philosophy. We lived on Saturday versus Miami, and now we died an ugly death versus FSU. 1-for-14 from deep, ain't beating anyone. Yeah, and in the games that Syracuse has pulled off, even the close ones, even the good ones, maybe the ones that they should have, would have, could have not even won, they shot well. And they just didn't shoot well yesterday. So, I mean, it's so easy to sit here. I told Joe before we went on, I was like, look, there's not much to say about a loss. I mean, we could talk about a win. We could point out key players. We could give accolades. We can give attaboys. We can do all that stuff. When it comes to a loss, I mean, we all watch the game, right? So I think there's plenty of blame to go around, and it's not fun to talk about a loss. In fact, it ran through my mind to say, you know, maybe we just do wins. That would make the show fun. Right, Joe? We'll just do wins. Wins only. We don't come back after a loss. Take the day off. Take PTO day. At MC Dennis, terrible. This team is very hot and cold. Not going to win any more games this year. Come on. What a dumb comment. That's so dumb. I'm sorry.
Wow.
At Giant 4 fan, free throws matter. Yeah, I'm sick of hearing that. Free throws matter. But, and we don't know what the game would have looked like I said, if you hit the free throws, but that we were beat by, you know, further than the, more than the free throw spread would have been. So, at No Blanchard, speaking of No Blanchard, if we shot this low of a percentage from the free throw line and 3-point line, we're not beating anyone. Needed this one to solidify a bubble spot. Lots of season left, but I don't see us making the tournament without a signature win. Joe, what do you think about the signature win? And when you look on the schedule for Syracuse, you know, you've got plenty out there. You've got UNC that's going to be coming to the Dome. Obviously, they're ranked 3 in the country right now. That's the only slated ranked team that we currently have to look forward to. But you got teams that might get there, like NC State, I feel, is like right there, and that's a good opportunity. But what's going to be a signature win besides North Carolina, if you want to talk signature wins, Joe?
Great question. Because realistically, you can only play who is in front of you, right?
Yeah.
And we spoke about this before with all the net rankings and all that other stuff. Like a signature win, like it all depends on where you start. Like it's almost like where you start in the rankings, it gives everybody a leg up. And all of a sudden, everyone else has got to catch up. So, yeah, I don't know. It's tough to say what a signature win is, right? And then
you almost have to wait to the end of the year to find out.
Right. And then on top of that, when you look at it, I mean, how do we know? I don't know. It's you can only play who's in front of you, right?
Right, exactly.
So, I mean, that's the way that I look at it. And when you look at our schedule right now, the only teams that are being talked about going in the tournament right now that I've seen,
UNC, Duke,
Clemson, and Wake Forest are like the top four that I see. So realistically, a game at Wake Forest, obviously the North Carolina game, and then obviously
Clemson,
you know,
the
two Clemson games, especially the last one at Clemson. That's really it, right? But that doesn't mean that a lot of these other teams can't beat you or I don't know. I think the ACC has got a bad rap. I don't know what's going on because it seems like, you know, there's Power Five conferences in football and in basketball. And for some reason, the past couple of years, and again, I don't know if there's politics involved or whatever, but it looks like ACC is just getting super, just a lack of respect when it comes to, you know, us compared to other Power Five conferences. And you saw some of the stuff last night. They showed how many teams have made the tournament, and how, I mean, I don't know if they were talking about the last 2 or 3 years, and then the records in the tournament and everything. And I mean, at the end of the day, the ACC, the teams that show up in the NCAA tournament for the ACC, they usually show out. And meanwhile, you get 9-10 teams from the Big Ten, and by the Sweet 16, they're all gone. So I just don't know. There's got to be a better way. And you can't just rank all these ACC teams low and then throughout the whole season just be like, oh, well, they didn't have a signature win because these teams aren't ranked. Like, they're not – I don't know. I don't like starting teams off at a certain rank and then going off of that. Like, can't we all just start, like, clean slate and then we just start going off of it? Just start, like, game one. I just don't – I don't like the way that it's set up. And it just seems to me like it's set up for the ACC to fail.
Well, it feels that way. I mean, but you never know. We've kind of beat the drum on the whole system thing, and ain't shit you can do about it. So, but beat the drum, and I guess we're just gonna have to wait and see. But I mean, like I mentioned, NC State. I feel like NC State should be a freaking tournament team. I mean, I don't know, man. You know, this quad system was supposed to show us, or give us a good idea of what the 68 were gonna look like, and those should coincide to some degree. And one's a formula, and one's a who knows, right? It's more human manipulated than anything. But my point is that it was supposed to give you a good gauge. And I feel like when we talked about this last episode, you know, I felt like it gave us a good gauge at first for the first couple of years, and now I feel like we're drifting away from it, and I don't feel like it means a ton anymore. And
well, we didn't know, right?
We didn't know at the time, but it seemed like it would be reasonable. We gave him the benefit of the doubt big time, Joe. Do you remember that?
Yeah, we did. 100%. 100% we did. But now you get these teams that we spoke about, Michigan State and a lot of these other teams. I mean, Michigan State's 11-7, and in bracketology, they're a 9 seed. And why? Why is that? Because the NCAA decided to just rank all these Big Ten teams up there in the rankings, and then they do good in the non-conference schedule, and then all of a sudden, everybody's in the top 30 in the damn net, and now everything's a tough win and everything's a great win and there's never a bad loss, like, and they don't move anywhere. Like, the non-conference and where you start sets up the whole conversation for you know, play. And we talked about this later last year, and now it's just, you know, it's something that's on my radar and that I'm looking at, and sure as shit, you know, it's happening again. And that's what it is where you start and what your conference does in the non-conference sets the whole table. Because now you got a 75% of your conference that's in the top 30 net. So every away game is a quad one game.
Every home game, a quad two game.
Like, they're playing ones and twos, and then you sit there and you say, oh, well, of course they're going to get quad one wins when they play that many quad one games. They're playing 10 quad one games in conference. Why can't we do that? Well, because all our, you know, half of our conference gets ranked from the beginning outside of the top 100.
In theory,
claw our way back playing against Cornell and Colgate.
In theory, those wins and losses amongst all the teams throughout the year of that conference should equal out to be more than broader. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, at some point, there's got to be separation between who is really good and then who is really was overrated within the system. At some point towards the end of the year or wherever, that the formula is true should equal out. But you're right. If you start where you're not supposed to start because they're putting you somewhere where they feel like you should be based upon your recruiting class or what you did last year or who's returning, right?
Where'd we start? In the mid-100s?
We talked about it. David brought it up. You know, Ken Pomeroy had us with 9 wins.
Do you know how good you have to be to go from 170 to up in the top 30?
I mean, you have to be almost perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
And you saw how far we dropped. Did I mention it? I thought I did.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, we went.
Got 12. I mean, we jumped up pretty good when we beat Miami, right?
I mean, we didn't jump up 12, and I feel like Miami was a better win than.
No, that's because where Florida State is. And again, this is the other thing is to me, non-conference should be separate. That's really what my thing is. I think that non-conference should be judged separately. They look at that stuff at the end when they want to look at, oh, well, what's one of your, okay, we can look at these two teams that are on the bubble. Okay, they're very similar in conference play. Well, how did their non-conference go, right? But to me, non-conferences, it's a warm-up. It's the beginning of the year. Teams lose to Lipscomb and Colgate and some of these other teams, and that shouldn't hurt you. Like, that bad.
True.
Because you're getting players back. You're, I mean, you have transfers. You have freshmen getting players back from injury. So, obviously, there's injuries in the beginning of the season. That's fine. But what I'm saying is that non-conference, you play it, and then I feel like start over. Start from scratch. Boom, ACC play, and then you judge that by what they do in their conference.
Maybe
don't judge the whole season on where you were ranked from the beginning and then what you did in the first 10 games when there's still 22 other games.
Don't rank teams until I'm just saying you don't rank teams until the non-conference is over and see where everybody should be.
Yeah, play non-conference and then rank from there. And then you have your quad games, you have your rankings, and then you start conference play, and everyone's playing in conference.
Based on strength of schedule, wins and losses, all that.
I mean, you can't do a strength of schedule. I mean, you can.
Well, you can after the non-conference is over. But
there should be a reset because people get it wrong. And just because Michigan State has started at 12th and they're normally good, and then now they're 11-7 and they're playing all these good teams, they don't move anywhere. So at the end of the day, I mean, if you're getting kudos for just losing games against good teams, I mean, shit, we're doing that.
Yeah, it's easy to do.
You know, like, okay, they're 11-7. We'll look at their strength of schedule. Well, yeah, well, they're losing all the tough games, same as us.
Yeah.
So why are they scheduling all those tough teams? But I think there's got to be something. I think that there should be a reset after non-conference, then you do the reset of the rankings, then you go into conference, and you base the majority of it on the conference tournaments, all that stuff. And then if there's a tie, if it's close, then you can look into non-conference. Say, okay, how'd they do in non-conference? How'd they do the full body of work? But right now, the non-conference sets the table for your conference play, when really your conference play should be the most important, should be what moves the needle more than anything. You know what I'm saying? Like, who cares if you had an upset in early November when we're talking, and we're in March? Teams are completely different at that point. And just because you beat a Kentucky in November or you lost to a Lipscomb, it shouldn't be the end-all, be-all when you went through and you just dominated or you did very well in your conference.
Right. Okay, well, let's continue. I just got a couple more. At Saltine Warrior, still 4. It's still an immature and lazy team. Free throws, renouncing, hustle plays, all were huge red flags tonight. Q3 loss like this could keep us out of the tourney. I understand the frustration. I was frustrated yesterday too. And, I mean, the thought crossed my mind, but you got to be, and this is immediate reaction from Saltine Warrior, but, you know, there is plenty of time to make up for it. We'll see what happens. We were in the same boat with our mental state last year at this time, and you know, turned out obviously we didn't make it, but you know, we've been here before where we have made it, and we just gotta know that there's X amount of games left and we still got a shot. So at Barry Cuse, like that, Syracuse Barry, Justin Taylor doesn't belong on the roster, let alone the starting lineup. Giving Red a pass on this year. Wait until he brings his guys in and go from there. Flashes with this team, but tonight came down to depth and athleticism. I mean, Justin Taylor makes me cringe a little bit, but he does. I love him. I want him to do good so bad. You know what I mean? He's got the size. You know what I'm saying? He's got the build. He's got to use it, man. Be stronger with everything.
Yeah.
You know, because he's a strong guy.
Eric from Facebook says that Justin Taylor should be playing in D3.
See, I don't know, man.
I hate that shit.
Huh?
I hate that whole, I mean, yes, are there people or players that they get recruited to Power 5 or Power 6 teams and they don't turn, like, pan out and, you know, okay, maybe it's just too high of, you know, competition? Like, sure, right? But he's way better than D3.
Yeah, it's just I wish he would use his size a little bit. He's a built kid. You know, get in there and be aggressive. I mean, he does some of the things that he needs to do on the boards and defensively sometimes. He's just got to get his shot going. That's the thing. People don't see your shot going in, and they think you stink.
Yeah, and that's what Coach alluded to on a show earlier last week, too, is that, you know, Justin Taylor does – he is a heady player, and he does have some – you know, he does make some good defensive plays. And earlier in the season, he was one of the leading, you know, rebounders and stuff like that. So, but obviously, you know, you get to a certain point where they're asking him to guard, you know, power forwards and centers, and there's – some athletic, you know, gaps as well, athleticism gaps. You know, I wonder sometimes.
He's second on the team in average rebounds per game.
Right.
With his minutes, guys.
Yeah. And I think, honestly.
Only behind Malik Brown.
Right. And how many times have we seen players, it take 2, 3, 4 years to, you know what I'm saying? Sometimes it takes just a little bit longer to click or get that confidence.
Jesse Edwards.
Like Italy of D1 player. It's just sometimes I question. Was he recruited to come in and shoot threes and play the 2-3 zone? And does he necessarily fit in this system?
Jesse Edwards took a couple years. I know Joe's not using his equipment right now, so when I speak, he can't hear me right away. So, but yeah, Jesse Edwards was one of those guys. Took Jesse Edwards a couple years. We've said plenty of negative things about Jesse, about being soft and not strong with the ball on the inside and not being able to dribble worth a damn. And I mean, which we had some of those problems last night too, as far as the dribbling goes. Justin Taylor, honestly, being one of them, him, between him and Bell, getting the ball taken from him. But I mean, that happens with those bigger guys. But yeah, he does do some defensive things that I think garner his minutes. I mean, you know, a guy like Justin Taylor is only, I mean, I say only, well, he's averaging 25 minutes a game. I thought it was less than that until I just looked at it. So, anyway. Let me continue here. At Bonafide MW, got to learn how to break a press. Pass hard on transition, drive in hard, coast-to-coast cutting. Slowing them down has bad outcomes. Every loss was making them play slow half-court iso ball. The press is kryptonite to this team. I think they had the 1 second violation, like we mentioned, Joe. I mean, like you said, I think it just warmed down. It did slow the game down. But when they were running downhill, and they did it for a while, they were doing it. When they were able to run downhill, they were successful. And they were scoring a lot down there, but they were only scoring a lot doing that. That's the only time they were scoring. If they weren't doing that, the jump shots were flat. And so, you know, once that was kind of once it didn't work a few times and they had some empty trips, like particularly at the end of the game when we lost control of it, that's what happened. They couldn't get in there to do it. They weren't seeing anything fall and the defense went to shit and it was just ugly after that, period.
Yeah.
So, all right, Joe, look, do you have anything else?
I just thought it was funny. There's one real good one to me personally. Fred says 3-point shooters equals zero. Team is not gelling. Not much energy. Fans were boring. Very neutral. No excitement. Benny seems disinterested.
I didn't get that from Benny last night. I didn't.
No, I didn't.
You know, I feel like Benny's been particularly good since we lambasted him moderately here on the show a while back after a coach said something. So. He's been tremendous. Well, I won't say he's been tremendous, but he's been way better since then. And I haven't seen a relapse in it. But he mentions the fans. Bro, I got to be honest, man, and I'm not there. And so I understand the criticisms of, well, you don't even live here and you don't go to the games. So what are you bitching about? The crowd was terrible, dude. Did you see some of it, like, up close? Did you see the standing clap? Dude, y'all weren't even clapping, some of you. You're just standing. I'd say 25% of them were clapping, 75% of them were just standing there, not doing anything.
Right. Yeah.
So I put out a poll before the game. Thoughts on the standing clap. Okay, you had three choices. We need to do something else. I love standing and clapping, and I don't care. Don't care came at 327 votes. I don't care came in at 19%. 50.2%. I love standing and clapping. And that right there is the problem, is that this is a small sample size of 327 people. But for me, that is a telling poll. To have 50.2% say you love standing and clapping and 30.9% say we need something else. That's why it won't change. That's why our kids' kids are going to see people standing and maybe clapping at the, when they're our age. Standing and maybe clapping. While the blue hairs sit on their ass up in the rafters. And there's just, it's just, when I saw these results come in, I was like, it just makes so much sense to me. And how dare I even put this out to make a point when I got totally demolished in it? My point was to be made was that, listen, the fans hate this. Let's change it. But apparently, I'm in the minority. I had no idea. I thought for sure we were in the majority, Joe. I had no idea. That's how stupid I am. I thought that people hated this. No, they love it. They love standing and clapping or standing only. They love it, Joe. You surprised by that?
No.
50.2%, bro.
This is my guess. My guess, and the reason why I say no is, number one, we don't know exactly. Yeah, there could be a lot of trolls, right? And then on top of that, are these people actually going to the game and actually having to live through this?
Well, you could go through the comments.
I know you ain't standing and clapping at the house.
That's damn true. You can go through the comments,
bro. It's funny because I can go full circle. And I remember when I was in the military before I went overseas, the year that, thank God, I got to watch us win a national championship before I went and did that. But in my barracks, you know, it was a place to hang out and, you know, play video games, drink, whatever. And, you know, I was watching those games. And if you were in that season, if you were in my room and you wanted to hang out and watch the Syracuse game, then you were standing and clapping in my barracks, in my room. I made anybody stand and clap until we made the first damn shot. And I enforced that in my room. And now, full circle, at 40 years old, I can't stand it. I almost want to write apology letters to those people.
You should send them a text or something.
Look, they drank my beer, so it is what it is. But yeah, I mean,
oh, okay.
And it's not. And I think that the people see it. I mean, TJ on Facebook, Kalbach, said his comment was crowd attendance 417. Like, it was
bad.
It's tough. So I don't know. I mean, like I said, if those people go or don't go, I don't know. All I know is that it's just, we've talked about it. It doesn't make any sense. We got to do something different. And also, too, to what you were saying, you know, to, you know, any type of response, if you have fans that are like, oh, well, you live in Virginia Beach, you don't go, you don't have any, like, all these people, all these fans, they're demanding a better product. They're demanding wins. They're demanding these kind of things. This is what they want. So why wouldn't you want to be a part of doing something or fixing something or being a crowd and being allowed so that you can help change that? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, albeit, okay, yeah, we're not there. That's fine, right? So, like, okay, we're calling out fans for not being loud. Okay, fair. But if you want a better team and you're going to the game and you're getting to go to the game, then why aren't you being loud?
Jump on board,
yeah. We can't go to those games. Would we have season tickets for basketball?
I would have season tickets to both.
I don't know.
I would have them for both, just for family. I mean, you don't use them, you give them away, but you got them.
Right. So I don't know. It's just one of those things where, you know, if we were there, I mean, we can say these things, but even if I didn't have season tickets, I would be at a majority of the games like I was when I was living there. So, and I was loud as shit. I've left that dome so many damn times, hoarse, lost my voice. I've always looked at it like we were a part of the game, and it's an awesome feeling even leaving the dome. and thinking, like, damn, it was loud. We won. They had some penalties. Like, damn, we were a part of that W. We were a part of that win. It's like, it's like a prideful moment for a fan. I mean, you actually, you put in the effort as well. And I just wish that more fans were like that versus feeling like they are just, you know, owed a good product.
Yeah, guaranteed.
But something. They don't have to put in any time, money, or effort.
Yeah. Well, this conversation will continue. For me, though, I don't see an end in sight to it. And just please, if you could, go back, watch, everything is rewatchable. Go back and watch the beginning of that game in the beginning of halftime and look at that crowd and what that crowd is doing. And mind you, we were up by one after the half, playing a pretty resilient game. Just check them out. We're like, it's pathetic. I'm sorry. It's the only word I have for it. Pathetic.
Yep.
I thought it stunk. So anyway. That's all I got about Florida State. Look, the schedule of the show is going to be, we're going to be on hiatus for a little bit. I don't know when I'll be able to be back. I'm going to be on West Coast time. I've got, I've got some work stuff to do. I'm going to be extremely busy. Last year I did bring all of my equipment, at least a travel podcast, kit. And I never even got a chance to take it out of the luggage and even bother setting it up. So I'm not even going to bother this time because it was a hassle to bring it. So next week is going to be tough. We're not going to get here after the North Carolina State game. And I don't even know what's after. What is after that, Joe? It is
At Boston College.
College. That's right. That is the Tuesday. So those two games, obviously, I not have a problem getting back for after the Wake Forest. And if we got time, we can talk about it in between. We will. But for now, we're going to leave you with a little NC State preview. And, you know, Joe is going to pretty much handle it because don't really have much. I can just tell you this, that the all-time series between Syracuse and NC State sits at 12-6 in favor of the Orange. Syracuse is on a 5-game win streak against NC State right now. Last year's game, 75-72 win. Mintz, Gerard, Edwards, Bell, and Brown, you're starting 5. Mintz with 20 points. Edwards with 16 rebounds. And I'll tell you that the... this is a team that's definitely not as deep as Florida State. They're only going to run about 8 deep. Still, though, athletic guys. And you've got J.J. Burns, who we all know, right? Big, heavy dude down low. Yeah. What did I say?
I think J.J.
Yeah, D.J. Burns, who's the big, heavy anchor of...
6'9", 275.
He's an immovable object down there, Joe. But I haven't seen much NC State this year, so familiarize us, Joe. Do what you can here. Pick up my slack.
Well, I'll do what I can, but you know, NC State, obviously, they had a great run last year. They lost both their guards to the NBA in graduation. And they had Morsell come back. That's a name that we know. Transferred from Virginia, went to NC State. He's a senior, Casey Morsell. DJ Horn, a guard, they added through the transfer portal. He's a senior through Arizona State. He's their leading scorer currently right now. They have a junior guard, Jaden Taylor, who was a transfer from, and this is their starting lineup, at least last game against Virginia Tech. But Jaden Taylor, he's a transfer from Butler. And they also start a 6'6" freshman guard, Dennis Parker Jr. from Richmond, Virginia, alongside DJ Burns. So they go 4-guard heavy as far as in the beginning of the game. Taylor, Horn, and Morsell, they get a majority of the minutes. Horn and Morsell most likely won't come out of the game unless they're in foul trouble. But they've also been getting some bench help from 6'10 forward junior Ben Middlebrooks. And they also have a Muhammad Diarra, who's a 6'10 forward from France, who was a transfer from Missouri as well. So they have a lot of guys from the transfer portal. They got a lot of experience. And the other guard that comes off that I can't forget about him, Michael O'Connell, he's a 6'2 guard from Mineola, New York. He's a senior, and he transferred from Stanford. So, yeah, this isn't an overly tall physical team like we've dealt with. Like, I mean, they got big guys, right? Burns is big, DR is big, Middlebrooks is big, but they're not like the Florida State and North Carolina bigs.
They're not. But they're not as athletic as them either, but they're athletic enough. I mean, Burns is just a big dude.
Right. So, you know, rebounding is obviously going to be tough, and Burns is a big dude down there. And it's always fun to see us play against these new teams when we're not playing against the zone, right? Because obviously, you know, NC State, they kind of struggled against the zone, and we're on a 5-game winning streak. So it'd be interesting to see if that's something that we go to, if, you know, we feel like it's necessary. But this NC State team, I mean, they're pretty good, dude. They don't have a lot of – I mean, I think they lost, but their only two losses are to Virginia Tech in North Carolina, as far as in the ACC conference. Their other games, they lost to BYU and Ole Miss in a tournament over the holidays, and then they lost a game against Tennessee, which we lost. And so, like a point opponent, they only lost by 9. So – this NC State team, they're good. I talked to fans around here. They're excited about them. They were really – they didn't know what to think, but, you know, they bring in those, you know, four transfer portal guys from Stanford, Missouri, Butler, and Arizona State, and they all are a little bit older, a little bit more experienced for the most part. So we're dealing with an experienced team, and that's going to be really the biggest thing is can we keep our composure and not allow these guys to overwhelm, you know, our younger players. But thankfully for us, their older, more experienced players that kind of play the most minutes are guards, and that's where we're deep as well. So I think we match up well there. It's more or less, I think the main thing is going to come down to, you know, I think what it always comes down to is just teams like this that are physical and got big guys. How are we going to deal with them? You know, how are their big guys and their physicality on defense? What does that look like comparable to a North Carolina or a Florida State? Because just like you, I haven't seen enough of them, and I don't know if anybody's interested, but they are playing Virginia at Virginia tonight.
Yeah, right. So, but like I said, by the time anybody hears our voices, that may be over.
Yeah, it might be. No, it's not going to be over. It starts at 7, but I'm just saying, I mean, well, yeah, okay, I get it. Yeah. But yeah, so nonetheless, if anybody gets to watch that, then that's going to give you a little bit of a preview of what you got with NC State. But yeah, no, definitely not. There's a team on the rise, not an easy game. Obviously, it's a home game, and their net ranking isn't high because they started way back in the rankings too. So, of course, if we end up losing this, we'll probably drop another 12 in the freaking net, which doesn't make any sense because they're 5-2 in conference.
And they're 77, and they lost against Virginia Tech recently, and they dropped – they went up 2. So, whatever.
No rhyme. It's probably because they were on the road. Like, I feel like sometimes some of those things, like, you know, you lose, you win a home game, you don't go up that much. You lose a home game, you go down a whole lot.
Like a rock.
You lose a away game, you don't go down that much. You win an away game, you go up. Like, I think they might have too much
on the home and away game.
Yeah.
Advantage disadvantage.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, it's possible, you know. If you show out like the Syracuse fans did last night, it doesn't matter. Anyway, that's my I mean, can we take crowd size and noise factor into it if we're going to do that? Okay, well, they had a home game, but the crowd sucks, so we're going to go ahead and we're going to, you know, divvy that up, cut that in half, and, you know, instead of losing 12 spots, Syracuse loses 6.
Yep.
All right, do we want to pick this game?
Not really.
Not really, but neither do I. As far as
the big game goes, I mean, this is the new this is the new NCAA, right? Like, it's hard. You watch a team 1 year and they go to the tournament. They had a pretty good year last year, and then they graduate a bunch of guys, and you're like, well, what's going to happen? And lo and behold, oh, don't worry, next year, three brand new starters to the transfer portal, and you know,
you could fix it. Two
of your main subs off the bench, transfer portal. So just completely, you know, gone are the days where you can go 2, 3, 4 years and, you know, grow with these teams and you know, look forward to matchups that have been going on for years.
Yeah, that's just not a thing anymore. No. Be lucky to keep our rivalries like Pitt and Boston College, Notre Dame. You know, we'll be lucky to keep those, I think, in the near future, unfortunately.
Yep.
And for me, as far as rivalries go, that's what I'm kind of – those are the teams. And if we don't play those teams, if something happens, it's going to suck. I already hate what they're doing to football. I mean, I hate SMU and Cal and these clowns in the ACC. It doesn't even make any sense. It's not the ACC. Call something else. Because those aren't Atlantic Coast teams.
Well, don't worry, because next year there's going to be like 17 teams in the Big Ten. So that makes sense.
Big 17. Yeah, right. Exactly. So stupid. Okay. All right. Well, let's do this, dude. You know, we're going to go ahead and we're going to scratch off. We're not even going to talk about last game. That was the first game, by the way, that we did not project the correct winner. I don't know if you knew that, Joe.
Actually, I did.
Okay. Now, if I'm wrong, David will call me out, but I'm pretty sure. I didn't keep track of that, but I'm pretty sure we were 100%. I'm picking the actual winner. So, okay, look, Syracuse has done a really good job of rebounding. The only time they didn't rebound after a loss was during the Maui Invitational and losing to Gonzaga, right? So I don't think these past two teams after we play NC State are that caliber of team. We're at home. I expect Syracuse to dust themselves off and try to come back and win this thing. Do I really think they're going to, or do I just really want to pick them to? And my answer would be this. I don't know. I really don't know if they can win this game. However, I'm going to ride the Syracuse Tide, and I'm going to bring that puppy to shore because I've got to believe that the resiliency of this team and the fight in this team that we've seen is still there enough to at least make this close, if not win this thing. So I'm going to go with Syracuse, Joe, and against my gut. And I just talk myself into it. And out of the two games that we talked about, this one in Florida State, I thought this was the tougher of the two. And I still think that. But you yourself, Joe, you're the guy that says sports are games of matchups. And I just don't feel like that was a great matchup.
No.
I don't think this is a great matchup either, but I think it's better, personally. So, I think it fits our game a little bit better. You talk about what Judah does, getting people in foul trouble and stuff like that. He's actually got a shot to do that. And you've just got, I think Malik Brown can jump higher than Burns.
So there's you think?
So there's that.
It's like
I know. So anyway, all right. I'm done playing around. Okay, I'm going to stick around the same range I've been at. Syracuse struggling to break 70 points, but I think they're going to do it. I think it's 72-69. It's going to come down to making foul shots at the end for Syracuse in a tight one. Joe, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm kind of right there with you. We have rebounded from losses. Obviously, you take away the Maui Invitational. And, you know, another home game. It's a Saturday. Hoping that we will get a better outcome of fans than we have the last Saturday or last night. But, again, I think it's a better matchup. And, obviously, not as deep. So, yeah. I mean, I'm just going to ride with it. But it's going to be a little bit closer for me. And I think it's going to be a little ugly too. It's, you know, like I said, I think we come back from that. I think that Kwadir Copeland comes back from that, you know, hitting a game winner and then having a game like that.
Probably the worst game he's had all year.
Probably. Yeah. So, yeah, we got to get back to that. And honestly, like I said, I don't think that, that NC State puts in is, I don't want to say that. Those are bad words, bad words. I don't think that NC State just plays as aggressive on defense because of the fact that they have specific players that they just can't lose if they want to stay in games. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah,
you know, to your point, they go about three deep. They can go deeper, but they like to go three deep and obviously keep Burns and all them out of foul trouble. Burns is not a guy that's going to play, you know, 25 minutes plus a game. So just got to be smart with that. I just don't think they have the wiggle room as far as a roster to be able to play with different lineups and bring in a whole bunch of different big guys. You know, they bring big guys in to sub out for Burns, not so to put two or three on the floor at the same time to make it a crazy mismatch. So different team, different matchup. I feel like we have had their number. I feel like we will go to zone if we need to, because we've proven that we can stop that, their type of offense, their system for the past five games. So I'm going to go a little bit lower though. I'm going to stick with the 69. I think we get 69 and I think NC State 67.
Wow. Okay. A real quick shout out to my buddy Matt, who made me the Syracuse rug. I put it on Twitter. He does custom rugs and he made me a Syracuse one for with Otto on it for Christmas. Did you see it, Joe?
No, I didn't.
You didn't see it? Hold on. Let me hold this up just super quick. I got a quick story. Gosh damn it. All right. So can you see that?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, that's nice.
It's nice, right? It's super, yeah. It's super, super comfortable.
Like puffy and
it's,
comfortable?
It's. I stand on it when I podcast, okay? Because I stand when I podcast and I use it and I stand on it and it's super comfortable and I love it. And it's a cool rug.
I thought you'd been sitting down
the whole time. Hey, F off, okay?
Oh, my bad.
But anyways, so I put it on Twitter and they're expensive. It's not cheap to make. In the amount of hours that he's got to put into it, he's got to sell these things for like $250. I think he's making them here in Virginia Beach. He makes them in Virginia Beach and he sells them for $250. That's with shipping, right? So he's had a lot of people contact him and want rugs, and you know he's given them prices and they haven't come back. But Dan Villari came to Matt, my buddy Matt, and wants a rug. So my buddy is making Dan Villari a rug with his number on it with Otto on it. I thought that was pretty cool. Wow. Yeah.
So is that from your Twitter? From our Twitter?
Yeah. Yeah. It's from, it has to be. It's the only place I put it.
Huh.
I don't even think I put it on Facebook. But he sent Matt a picture of my tweet or my X or whatever the hell it's called. And sent it to Matt on his DMs and said, hey, can you make me one of these? And Matt's like, well, I can make you that, but how about we incorporate your number on it or something? And Dan was like, oh, yeah, that's cool. So my buddy Matt's got it all designed up and just awaiting approval from Dan the man. And I thought that was pretty cool. So anyways. All right. Look, I appreciate all of you for hanging in there through the good and the bad times. We'll see what happens Saturday. We're going to really see what this team's made of on Saturday. And I expect to see fight. So we will be back the next time we're back. And I appreciate all of you for tuning in. For Joe, I'm Sean. We're out.
Peace.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.